Good morning. My name is Kim van den Akkor for the Department of Health. And I recently, we started to get interested in, which basically the question is like, okay, who do you test conundrum? Right? Because you have limited money, but you would like to test everybody. And so, basically it's the optimist, because an optimized screening algorithm basically is essential to maximize the chance of identifying infected but previously undetected individuals, but also at the same time minimize the cost per detected individual, because everybody that you do not have to test because you know beforehand that they negative saves you money and you have money you can use for other. And so the big question that we had is how to optimize screening criteria. So, just a little bit of a background. If you have undetected hepatitis B or C infection, you have an explicit risk for health without downstream medical costs, for example, for the treatment of disease and complications like liver transplant and death. It's a very expensive thing to miss. And so, what we had, and that's what we used for this study, is we have basically hepatitis risk assessment data, 18 factors, that were systematically collected and stored in either CareWare or in the health management systems from the HMSs for the county health departments in certain reporting areas. Unfortunately, not for everybody, but we have a fair number of them. And so, what we did is we got hepatitis risk factors and the age from 2009-2010 from CareWare. And we've got the laboratory results from the ELR, the ELR owner server, and basically emptied both of them. And then we did a matching on first name, last name, date of birth, and county of residence. We saw that, and so I did some testing on that this worked reasonably well. There were a few people who I had reason to believe that they had actually moved between the different counties because they were kind of this away from each other. And what I got basically on that is about 13,000 cases that I had with both risk assessments, risk factors for, as well as testing data. Now, most of these are all testing data that's done through the lab, the state lab, and therefore I have both positive and negative labs regardless. Of those 13,000 cases, I had 112 acute Hep B infections, and I had 750 chronic Hep C infections. So, the question then becomes, okay, how can we identify which risk factors are actually the most important to identify a specific case? And although there's a lot of techniques here, but one of the ideas, and it's used especially in the industry a lot, is data mining techniques. Because data mining techniques have as an advantage that they not really analyze the whole data set at once, all the factors at once. They generally a little bit more capable of drilling into your data to find what are the factors that were necessary. And what it does is it is a sequential subdivision of the sample in two subgroups. And the first group is enriched for the target value, while the second subgroup is depleted for the target value. And so you will start to see more and more, step after step, more and more cases coming together based on certain factors. And you will see this in a second, how this is very beneficial. And what we then can do also, because with the use interactive classification trees, you can actually set different misclassification costs for both sides. So missing a Hep C for patient is penalized way harsher than testing someone who is basically negative, because that's where our benefit is. We want to find those people. You can change that. You can how harsh you want to make the difference in the misclassification, you can determine beforehand or during the day and see what you need for that. And what we could do is determine the optimum client selection in the financial context of public health. We all have limited money. So, this is basically just the classification as in a whole thing. So, you start here with your whole sample, and then you have basically two groups. This one's enriched, this one's depleted, and you go on, and these are your final nodes. And what you see is that you go very deep to find things. And That looks like if you go into here, for example, the first one here was year of birth, 1970. Do you get basically here? You have basically a lot of people that are not affected, very few, and you can find those things. It can basically handle both continuous and categorical variables. And then you go basically to the next step: jail, snorting drugs, etc. The benefit is that if you have the first split here, the thing that splits it here might be totally different than the one that splits there, because you don't use all the factors at the same time. You actually can optimize within each subset each time which factor is the most important. So what we did is I basically kept playing with the misclassification factors till I had a misclassification penalty that basically I could find all infected individuals. And so that basically resulted in that I didn't have to test of the 13,000, I should not have tested of more 4,500 people for hepatitis B, because they basically just don't have it based on their risk factors. You basically can be very, very sure. And the same for about 1,500 of the people for hepatitis C. If I would make a calculation of that, that basically is instantaneously saving 20% of testing. I think that's fairly substantial. So, and then I basically went on because, well, reducing your testing one end is nice, but I can still test a lot of people even if I have this optimized material and basically test and spend way too much money at the state lab. And so what I did is I basically, with using the misclassifications and changing those, I basically said, hey, how many tests do I have? How many do I find? What is the cost? Basically, when you do a few tests, you find a few people, but those people are actually relatively cheap to identify. In hepatitis C, the first people, you basically cost about $25 to identify them. But by the time you basically trying to find the last person that you know that's in your data set you want to find, you basically have $150 for a patient. Now, for hepatitis B, acute hepatitis B, it's even much more pronounced. You start with around between $125 and $150, you end up with $450 to find the last person. And so what you can do, because the cost per subsequent individual is increasing, and because we will have to optimize for both of them at the same time, what's the best? I basically did solve a pair of linear equations, set the budget limit to $150,000, then put in the cost per test $7 for Hep B surface antigen for acute B and $10 for hepatitis C antibody. I can actually solve this equation and say how many tests can I do within this money to find most people that are the largest number of possible people. And what you then get is that you can perform about 1,100 tests for acute Hep B and 40,000 tests for chronic Hep C. And that will mean that of the cases that I will identify, unfortunately not that many of the Hep B, about 22%, but I identify still 75% of the chronic Hep C cases. But the most important thing is you get an enormous improvement in positivity rates. I go from 0.9% to 4.4% for Hep B in 25 cases, and I go from 5.7% to 16.3% in chronic Hep C while doing this. At the same time, I'm staying also within my budget instead of blowing it totally out of proportion. And so I've got a cost reduction of about 2/3. This will set up $150,000, but normally this will be $450,000. I save $300,000 and get a fairly substantial number of people. So, well, that's all really nice. And when you have the tree, you saw there were a lot of steps, and so that is kind of very unwieldy to use in the context of a clinical setting. And so, what you really want to do is kind of reduce a very large tree of the classification into a bit more manageable set of cases. And so what I did I identified the optimum set of criteria with overall I wanted to get a high overall positivity rate. I wanted limited complexity, so I limited the combinations to three factors maximum. because if you have six different factors that you need to have for a very small subgroup, becomes quite different. If we have electronic ways to do it, that might be an option. But if you have to do it on paper, it's not yet a feasible way to do it. And for simplicity, I used a single age criterion, and basically if we were born in 1970 or before or after 1971. And then we could develop flowcharts for clinicians that they can basically use for this. And this is basically what we came up with after I used basically the data mining data. And this is just a mock-up from just to show how it could look like. This is with data, this is kind of the optimized criteria when we use indeed also race and ethnicity in it. And from all the people with hepatitis C, if you have ever shared needles, or you are in a long-term Hep C positive apartment, or you ever had sex with money, or you were in prison, just test. Because you go, yes, test for Hep C. If not, then only the question, were you born before 1971, once important? If not, then you have this kind of complex combination where you find that some people are still of risk. If you were born before 1971, do you have snorting torture? Do you have a tattoo? Yes, go there. If not, then it turns out that there is a certain group of, especially non-Hispanic, non-Native American heterosexual males that are also at risk, and so you get yes. And with this, you can basically have a much more straightforward way, but it's less in the blue of, okay, what's going on? Because now there's a lot more background information built into the system to basically identify who should you test and who not. And I think with this, I come to about a 20%, between 15 and 20% positivity rate instead of about a 5.7%. So what we do here, if you use the flow charts results, you know, in the original sample, I had 11,000 tests, 564 positive, 5.1 positivity rate, and a total cost of $110,000. Cost per identified individual, almost $200. With the flow chart, I basically would do 2,000 tests, 90.1% of all the tests that I would do originally. I get 360 positive, that is 63%. I have a 17.1 positivity rate, or basically an increase of 335% of your positivity rate. The total costs are $21,000, and the cost per identified positive is $60, or 30% of what I had originally. So, future work that I was planning on working on, but unfortunately I'm leaving DOH, I'm going to Florida State University there, was to work on include additional demographic data as race, ethnicity, gender. I have done it in part of the analysis, but not in all of them. And also implement a weight option into an algorithm. So for example, we could say that we find that finding an acute Hep B is twice as important as finding and identifying chronic Hep C. This is just an idea. But sometimes we make those decisions in policy decisions because we just have limited money. What we find is important. And I wanted to basically improve on that so we could actually include that in the whole analysis. And then we can also explore these things that could be used for interview risk factors. Data that we collect for syphilis and HIV, because you can not only use this for hepatitis C, you can use this for any disease where you have more data, or especially when you have risk factors. But also, if you really want to move forward there, for example, if you have census tract data, level data, like poverty rates or that kind of thing, that you can do similar things, similar analysis with that, if those factors play a role. So, conclusions. Data mining techniques can dramatically improve screening criteria for hepatitis while minimizing the number of excluded individuals. And this basically may result in increased positivity rates, maximizing detection of positive cases within budgetary constraints, decreased costs, and potentially lower overhead costs such as DIA salaries and facilities use, because not even to get in consideration. But if you have less people to basically test and all that kind of things, not only the test costs are lower, but also administrating the costs and getting people in and all those kinds of things. So the cost savings might be actually much more than what I showed here. And that was it. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Thank you for that. fascinating presentation. I have a couple questions. The first one is, since you were using CareWare data, was the data mining that conducted only on the HIV positive population with regards to the risk factors?
No, we used CareWare just to store Hep C screening data for the risk factors, and it's a separate table that we just basically pulled the data from.
So, thank you.
But the thing is, because I think what you're asking, we could actually match the same data up also, for example, with eHERS data.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you start matching, it doesn't matter how many you start. Okay, I use Statistica with SQL queries for the matching. Nothing prevents you to basically match up 20 different databases in that system.
Great, thank you. And then my second question was whether or not you would use the classification tree or the decision algorithm for providers on any external data sources to see how effective it was.
No, I've not done the kind of cross-validation. What's an important part that needs to be done? There are some techniques within the data mining that you can use as cross-validation, that seems to be pretty okay, but ideally you want two independent data sets and basically test it out, see what you get, then go to a second data set and do the same thing and see if that basically on the criteria, see what happens there, and then once you have done that, run the original analysis on the second data set and see if you get a real different answer there. Now, I do think that my suspicion is that you get regional differences in different type areas of the country, but you can just run the whole analysis on a new data set. It's very simple, especially once you have the algorithms developed and stored, because I store them on Totro in a single file. You just basically match up another data set, and then you run the whole analysis and you're done with it.
Nathan from Marshall County Health District in Reno, Nevada. Thank you so much for three wonderful speakers. I have to say that from yesterday, this is the most exciting breakout session for me. I'm glad that you come here. And I have rated as a 5-star.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very fascinating for bringing the classification tree into this concept of the programming for planning with the budget. So I'm just wondering for the Florida, since you have that flowchart for risk factors. So how would you balance your recommendation versus CDC's universal screening vaccination among baby boomers? So could you comment on that?
The thing is, I'm an analyst. I do analysis and that kind of things. And when it really comes down to translating this into the policy decisions that basically among people, maybe Jim Matthias can say a little bit more about it.
Sure. Jim Matthias before the Department of Health, I'm happy to be able to measure. One of the issues we really are coming up with here in the Florida Department of Health is why we had to start this project to begin with, is that the implications of times when we used to have more money or HIV coverage or more hepatitis testing was something that was something more of the past. As the budgets continue to shrink here in Florida, we had to come up with a way to still continue to do the best hepatitis testing that we can. So it really didn't become an option for us to continue to do the CDC universal testing with the budget that we have. And so we were fortunate enough to have, as Dr. Vanderland said, 13,000 people supplied at advanced risk factors. If you look at universal testing just for baby boomers, there are plenty of people who may be being tested who may not get the same risk as the people we were able to identify with this algorithm. So the universal testing is something that we are certainly struggling with the given budget restrictions we have to test within our individual programs.
So, follow-up question, do you educate your healthcare provider to use the CDC universal screen for the testing, or this is just, I assume this is for public health?
That is for the public health,
yeah.
Where testing is being done at the public health state, the public health state lab at this point.
We sort of run in the opposite direction in Massachusetts, and that we're now simultaneously testing all of our blood specimens from counseling and testing sites that we support. For both hepatitis C and HIV. And so we're actually getting risk factor data that could be used to do the kind of analysis for validation. But broadly, it also causes complications in terms of policy because we are testing, I think, maybe not as of today, for our prison system. And that raises enormous issues for them in terms of their exposure. Issues that we think they should be dealing with, but they are also dealing with budget restrictions. So now they are concerned that they might find out about a lot of hepatitis C infected inmates that they would not have tested on risk based. They have a risk based testing policy and what the implications are for them.
I think that's the crux of the matter. I mean, I think it was really very interesting analysis. I really appreciate the presentation today. A lot of food for thought there. We don't want to find testing people because you don't want to treat them. Is that the issue that we're saying? The cost of the test is really nothing. And the cost of doing a transplant or the cost of treating someone with cirrhosis is really what we're trying to prevent with any of this. And so finding people like $25 for a test is minuscule compared to what you have to deal with in terms of actually managing somebody with complications of hepatitis C. And so the more target is how do we find as many people as we can and then target what treatments people are getting so we're preventing those long-term complications. And that's the direction we move to for HIV. We now have in British Columbia routine testing for 18 to 70 years old for every 5-year HIV testing to make it a normalization. We know the risk factor testing is complicated because most people are not going to identify any of those risk factors when they're going to the physician to destigmatize the ideas about testing for Hep C and HIV. We want to move to more universal testing so that it becomes more of a paradigm in practice. And so I hear the cost of certainly at the lab level. I mean, our lab within HIV has, their new cost of doing the amount of testing we're doing is breaking the bank. But at the same time, if we're finding 25% of people who don't know they have HIV positive and preventing the complications associated with that, that's more of the longer-term economic analysis I think needs to be attached to this kind of data.
I think the difference is that in this country, the difference is that there's no question that treating hepatitis C is cost-effective. That's not like debated anymore. That's been settled. And it's interesting how that argument still goes on, but the problem is cost-effective for whom? Because whoever is going to pay the cost down, not necessarily going to recoup the benefit later. And perhaps if you have a provincial health system, a public health system, who's going to reap the benefit of the treatment now. And that's the problem we got in this country. So nobody wants to pay for it now because they don't think they're going to reach the benefit.
One thing I want to say also is one of the things I have been thinking of is, for example, you can put all those factors also in this analysis and start thinking more about it, because who are, for example, what is our purpose? And if you can test everybody all the time, and yes, do that, absolutely, but if you have the limits, then you really have to think about it. And so you could, for example, take into consideration who is most likely to go to impact someone else? What are the factors that basic infectivity? How many people is this person going to infect versus that person? If someone is basically 65 and identified with Hep C and then just infected, what's the risk that they develop complications somewhere down the road that are very, very expensive versus a 10-year-old or a 21-year-old who gets it and basically is going to still use needles and share them with a lot of people because there are no needle exchange programs. So who do you want to target to really find and treat so that you can take that person out of the infection loop? Ideally, yes, test everybody. But once you have limits on that, the thing is, we were testing a lot of people. We were usually sending out the CDC guidelines to the clinics, but a lot of them just basically ran test everybody anyway. I can see really different counties. The age profile is really young people or baby boomers. It really depends on how they deal with it. And so, because there is basically not really solid guidelines, we spend a lot of money that we could basically spend on finding those people that we really need to find. And what I'm saying also, we can find 100% what we find now, and still saving 20% money. So, I think there's a lot of things that can be done with this kind of things, even when you want to find everybody, but you can still save money there. And that's, I think, another part of the story.
And that, in this presentation, brings up the issue. So you identify pregnant women with hepatitis C because you want to make sure that their babies are handled appropriately. But then you could also cure that woman before her next pregnancy and not have to deal with that again. If you miss that opportunity if you're not treating, you're not thinking about treatment in terms of the way Kim explained it, that, you know, where can we get the most advantage from a societal level by curing everybody with hepatitis C so there's no more transmission. But that's a tough case to make to the policymakers and to the insurers, because you're now taking a high risk population, high risk of not completing therapy, high risk of getting reinfected. But that's where the money is, that's where the advantage is from societal basis. So we do have some time if people want to broaden the discussion related to these presentations or maybe some of the issues that arise from these presentations. One question I would raise in terms of data utilization is, have people gone to the All-Fair Claims data or whatever the equivalent name of it is, to try to get some of the testing and how this could be used for surveillance purposes?